Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sam Martin, the veteran, for the punt, and Marcus Jones. There was no fair catch at the 12, and he squeezes out of it. Marcus Jones down the sideline. Walker's in front, past the punter. Marcus Jones, and that's a punt return for a touchdown.
High noon, Jones and Keith. It's a Tom E. Tuesday with Tommy Curran. We'll get to Curran, NBC Sports Boston, in just a moment. We got Kiefer Madness for you at 12:45. Keith McPherson from WFAN. We're going to talk Red Sox-Yankees in the 1 o'clock hour. Get the New York perspective on that. Plus, if you missed our tiers, on a Tier Tuesday, they are up now at Jones and Keith. All the MLB playoff teams tiered off, plus the New York Mets. We decided to take
toss
a shot at them.
Toss them in there. They were so close.
Forgot to take our shot at Rafael Devers.
Yeah, that's on us.
So we got to get back to that. But as promised, it is Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. He is brought to you by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. Tommy Curran, how are we doing this week?
I am on top of the world. How are you?
Oh, we're doing great. We checked out your latest at NBC Sports Boston. I know you think the Patriots delivered a proof of concept victory over the Carolina Panthers this weekend. Why do you feel that way?
Because they played on defense, save for the first drive, the way that you expect and hope them to. They played offensively, intelligently. They didn't have an excessive number of penalties. They made plays on special teams. But the most important proof of concept was, if you want to extract yourself from being in the bottom quarter of the league, anywhere between 25 and 32, you have to start showing separation between yourself and those teams. And this was the first time they showed, if we play well and up to our capability, we can win by 29, should have been 36 points. Because we're not those teams anymore. So that, to me, I think was the most interesting. And when you look at the four games, they have riddled their feet with bullet holes in the two losses. And one was by 7 points and one was by 6 points. They're a little bit better than we expected. And I know that the pitching is batting practice level, but that's the way the league is right now, too.
What did you think of the sort of message sent where Ramondre Stevenson plays, he starts, and he gets the very first carry of the game?
I think Mike is really trying to thread the needle of, I'm going to show these guys I believe in them, and the more I do that and show faith in them, the more they will adhere to or understand that I'm part of this team, and I'm going to give everything I can to this team and buy in to the culture and the leadership that Mike is dispensing. So I think that was good. It was certainly a risk, because had he fumbled, then it's, as I said last week, that would have been on the coaching staff just as much as the player, because they knew that he was a little dented mentally. But I thought it was interesting. And Mike, again, is trying to thread the needle between the urgency that is presumed because they should be better with a better coaching staff, a second-year Drake May, and still realizing that this roster still is not top tier at a lot of spots.
You mentioned the slow starts and how strong they were defensively outside of that. Do you see like an overlapping theme there or a correlation in some of these games? Why the slow starts and how do they get that fixed?
Just to hear Mike explain it, he sounded yesterday when he was talking about it as if guys are trying to do a little too much. You spend all week doing one thing and then the game starts and you're overexcited and you overcommit. So tempering that level of enthusiasm and just trying to start calm might be part of it. And I also think that teams have a good script, and how quickly can you adjust? You know, last week Pittsburgh absolutely riddled them on the first two drives, and then they adjusted and calmed down. Mike, I think, literally used the words calm down. So I think those two things are working in concert.
What did you think of Mike Vrabel yesterday being asked about Josh McDaniels, and his first response was, you know, it's everybody on offense, you know, not just Josh.
I don't know whether that's what we in the media would presume it to be, or if it's just a normal, hey, let's divvy up the credit here. A lot of guys are doing good things, and we in the media, on the other hand, presume it to be, well, it was on a platter for him, and he couldn't say a nice thing. And I don't know. I mean, it's worth asking. If it is on a platter, and you pass on the opportunity to say that, my God, he's been unbelievable. If you look at the production of Drake May to be a top five passer in so many different categories, I mean, it's not our receivers. So, yeah, Josh has been incredible. I mean, you wouldn't say the receivers part, but I think that Josh McDaniels is right there along with the offensive line improvement, the biggest difference, because that's what you're extracting Drake May's performance from. Better protection, better play calls, understanding the strengths of a average at best group of skill position players collectively, and then say, well, what can we do to make the kid better? And they found that through four games.
Let's stick with Drake May for a moment with this week's Drake Take from Tommy Curran, presented by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. Drake is getting a lot of national love, a case that he is arguably the best quarterback in the 2024 draft class. We played a clip from Colin Cowherd today saying the Patriots have the guy, renew season tickets. Rich Eisen is comparing him to Brady and Manning and Kurt Warner and Aaron Rodgers and the starts and stretches they got off to in MVP seasons. Do you think Drake is deserving of the national hype that he's getting? We've been giving him quite a bit locally. Those are some examples of the national hype. Do you think he's worthy of it?
I always think the national hype is behind and not as deep drilling as the local. Like, are they noticing that again this past week against Carolina, his first throw of the game was into traffic and could have been a pick and could have been a repeat of the same issues that we've seen at the beginning of games? They're not scrutinizing that. They don't read the whole book. They just read a page here and there. So
they're like high school me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
First paragraph, last paragraph.
Yes.
Figure out the rest. Spark notes. Yeah.
I'm having a long, ongoing debate, discussion, argument with Phil, in which I'm saying that Drake May might already be a top seven passer in the league, but I don't know if he's a top 12 quarterback. The difference is quarterbacking includes decision-making, accuracy, calm, and he's showing great improvement, but in two of the four games, you can trace Drake's mistakes nice. To the reasons that they lost. But you can also trace, definitely in Miami, his efficiency. So is he becoming a quarterback? Yes, he is a terrific passer in terms of running this offense right now and taking what's in front of him. I mean, we understand he wants to be a gunslinger. I think his average depth of target is among the lowest in the league because those are easy throws, and his completion percentage is the highest in the league. Those are great strides for him to make.
Now that Christian Gonzalez is back on the field, is your understanding just, hey, this was a tricky hamstring injury that took 7 or 8 weeks to get back on the field? It's just one that, you know, he wanted to be 100% before he went on there? Or, you know, what do you think really happened there with Gonzalez and his eventual return?
It got a little muddy at the end because Gonzalez insisted he wanted to play the week prior, didn't play, and then when he was out there, he played every snap the other day. So I think it's interesting. The Patriots were anxious to get him back. They tried so hard to say we're not frustrated with him, but the subtext to so much of it seemed as if they were frustrated with the pace. I don't have a conclusive take on the enigmatic injury suffered by Christian Gonzalez, but I don't think it's over in terms of how will the Patriots view him going forward. Will he be one of the most rugged, tough, answer the bell, he's banged up as hell, but he keeps playing through it, guys? Or will this continue? And that remains to be seen, because I don't think that there's a lot of blood and guts players in the NFL anymore who are willing to say, I'll do whatever I can for the team and put my health in the balance, at least not in the way they used to. And there's a reason for that, and it's because the money is so astronomical They grow up in an NIL atmosphere. They're able to understand that they are personal corporations who can set up generations of their family. So I don't begrudge them the decision to say, I'm going to do what's best for me here. I know I want to play. I'd love to play. But I have to do what's best and reasonable for me no matter how much you need me. So I think that it bears watching, and it bears watching with every player, and it bears watching across the league, how the mentality of, look, I'm going to do what's best for me here. I understand what you want, but I do have to put myself first.
What did you see out of Stephon Diggs on Sunday? And I guess put another way, did you see anything different out of Diggs usage-wise? He was in the slot more. He played more snaps. There were more explosive plays. Do you think that was a product of who they were facing in Carolina? Do you think that's a product of him getting healthier, the way they're utilizing him? How did you see that play out on Sunday?
I think there was a little bit of zone being played, and he's so friggin' smart, and he runs with such good pace in terms of understanding, okay, I go 60 here, and now I'm going to go up to 80, and then I'm going to slow down. So I just think he's got incredible mastery of the nuances that Drake May really needs. I was on the 33-yard reception across the middle as he was running. I said, wow, he's not very fast. And like Tatum, it's still eye-opening to think that this guy is playing as many snaps as he is so soon after his ACL. I know Achilles is different, but this guy's playing football, which, you know, you can get your leg wrecked in a hurry, as we saw last night. So it's pretty amazing to me. But I also thought what was interesting was the ability to back shoulder that he showed on two different occasions, especially down the right sideline when he had that back shoulder throw that got them inside the 10-yard line. Just, it's good that May, can you imagine May hooking up like that with Devontae Parker? I mean, that's what was passing as their number one.
Yeah.
That was their number one receiver.
Jalen Polk or something like that. Yeah, exactly.
Juju.
Good point.
Yeah, that, don't think so. What have you thought so far, four games into Will Campbell's career?
Excellent. It's really, really good. Watch the first play of the game last week, if you can. And he just absolutely rototills the guy that he's blocking and then lands on him.
Is that 11? He threw 11 to the ground. I don't even know who that was, but I know the play you're talking about, Tom. Yeah.
Belly flopped on him. He's been great. I mean, the offensive line to me is the number one story of this team's success. That's why they're good. That's why Drake May has the opportunity to be who he's becoming. And nothing else would work if they were not at least, and this, I'm looking at it and they're still probably like the, you know, I don't know where they would fit in the NFL in terms of offensive line units, but they're probably not top 5 or 10, but it just looks somewhat competent or higher than competent that you're like, my God, he's got all day. We're just not accustomed to seeing that.
What sort of chance are you giving them in Buffalo on Sunday night?
I still think they have some idiocy left in them. I do. I don't think that one game of tremendous intelligence and efficiency and great responsibility against a team that didn't test them at home is enough data to show that they're ready to do that in Buffalo against a team that won't blink, that is the best team in the NFL and the odds-on favorite to go to and win the Super Bowl. They have to play almost perfect to stay within a touchdown all game. They have to play almost perfect and not make mistakes. If they can play mistake-free and lose 27-17, you know, there's not back-breaking penalties. There's not mind-numbing turnovers. The third-down conversions that Josh Allen makes, you look at it and go, well, what are you going to do? He's the best player in the league. He's got a guy hanging off him, and he throws it 45 yards downfield, and there was a guy there, and they caught it. I mean, those are the things that you'd say, okay, well, Buffalo's better. But if they fumble, get picked off, make panic decisions, throw inaccurately, cannot clear people out of spaces, have delay of game penalties, are inefficient on special teams, then you say, well, not ready yet. Not panicking because you have New Orleans and Cleveland and Tennessee and you guys brought and the Jets and the Giants, just a litany of teams that you can still get to 7-3 or 8-3 without really losing your mind. Isn't that unbelievable? Like Cincinnati.
Well, no, that's what I was going to say, Tom. I was, you know, going into the season, one of the reasons why a lot of us predicted them to have a bunch of wins was really based on their opponents. And it's actually even gotten
easier. Like, no Joe Burrow. Lamar Jackson's banged up. We'll see what happens. That's late in the season. But Tyreek Hill, you won't see him in the second go-around. Malik Nabers, you won't see him in that Giants game. So, yeah, you have the two Buffalo games. I think Baker Mayfield and Tampa are good. We'll see what Baltimore looks like. That's it. Like, and Baltimore's defense is terrible. So it's like
that's the whole list.
Schedule. Yeah, like those are the remaining tough games. So even if you lose, yeah, it would knock the wind out of everybody's sails if the Bills blow them out. But then you can easily bounce back with four straight games where you're going to be favored in.
Yeah, it was interesting the other day too. I think it was Dave Canales was talking about the Patriots and saying that, well, Mike kind of just does what he does and they do it well and they do it efficiently. And there was conversation as to whether or not that was insulting. I think it was on the Sunday morning show, actually, we were discussing it, or they would before I came on. Mm-hmm. And there's no shame in that. And that's actually how the Patriots should be. Look, if you're good with your three wood off the tee, don't pull out your driver to try and make a point. Mm-hmm. Just keep hitting the three wood. What difference does it make? So if they're good at playing a particular way and they don't shoot themselves in the foot when they play a particular way, do that. Because that should be enough to help you beat these teams like that are taking on water, like Tennessee or Cleveland or whoever else.
Mm-hmm. Tom, I'm curious for your perspective on this. You've covered sports in this town for a long time. You know, 20 years ago, Patriots regular season games versus Red Sox and Yankees in October would be an afterthought. I'm curious what you think of the state of the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry playoff game tonight within the city compared to how the Patriots are viewed, how Red Sox-Yankees used to be viewed, your perspective on how that's changed over the last, call it, 20 years.
I think consuming the Red Sox has changed so drastically. You know, it was really the early 90s, late 90s that fed into the fever of the early 2000s. Look, if they won a World Series, people were going to lose their minds anyway because it had been so long. But the Ortiz, Manny, Garcia Parra, Rodriguez, the dalliance with Rodriguez, the fact George Steinbrenner, he was still alive, right?
Oh, yeah.
Steinbrenner, it just harkened back. The link was still there. Consuming the Red Sox now is so different. It's to me, and I think as we get older, we have less time to spend 3 hours a night, five nights a week. It's like watching, you know, a three-hour movie, five or seven, six nights a week. You're not going to do it. But so it's harder to consume, and the players are more transitory. It's harder to develop that night-to-night affection. Now, the guys that I play golf with, the guys that I hang around with, there's a lot of them who spend a ton of time watching the Red Sox. It's different now than it was 2 or 3 years ago. But I think the Red Sox have become such an afterthought, too. And I think the Patriots were such a dramatic, easy-to-follow, transcendent team with so many storylines that they just rototilled the Red Sox, who were uninteresting for many years.
All right.
In many years.
Yeah, it's been a while. Tommy Curran, you can check out his work at NBC Sports Boston. Again, the latest is up there. It is a statement game for the Patriots. And on top of that, they make a point against Carolina with a proof of concept. You can also check him out at Tom E. Curran on Twitter. Tom, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Tom.
Tommy Curran joining us here on Jones and Keefe. He joins WEEI afternoons on Thursdays, so check him out there as well, plus all over NBC Sports Boston. He mentioned those Canales comments. We never really talked about that on our show. We were texting about it.
I understand how it could come across as an insult, but I don't think it was meant, and I wouldn't take it as such.
I would, whether he meant it as one or not, I can't speak to. I would take that as an insult.
But I think it's
we don't do anything, but what we do, we're really good at, which, by the way, I don't even think they had been good at through the first 3 weeks. I don't even know how accurate
he was actually kind of propping them up more so, because at that time they were 1-2, and you'd be like, well, they turn it over, they have a lot of penalties. So actually what you're saying, I don't even agree with, but I just mean they're not a team that has four different players in motion before the snap, and they're not doing these like crazy things defensively. So I know what he meant, but it makes it sound like, oh, like you can't do that kind of stuff. So you choose not to.
You're basic. You're simple. They don't do what we do over here. Like, I would take that as a shot.
But I think that's like a young coach that probably hasn't done a million press conferences, and he's actually just trying to talk about how he views the other team. And so if you choose to take it as an insult, go ahead, but I don't think that's what he meant.
No. I wish I knew comments like that before I bet him plus 1600 for coach of the year.
Yeah, he might be the first coach fired the way things are going.
Well, I think Brian Callahan might have the market cornered on that. Mike McDaniel, big win last night.
Yeah.
That's a bounce back for him. He's off the hot seat.
He's got no Tyreek Hill the rest of the year.
Your guy Daboll won.
Daboll did win, and he's got the Saints this week. So he might about to go on a little bit of a heater with nice Jackson Dart.
Nice little streak.
Yeah, he might be safe another year.
617-779-7937. We'll get back to the Red Sox, Curran, with some interesting perspective on how that's gone over the last 20 years. Because 20 years ago, you know, maybe flip on the Patriots in the middle of a Red Sox-Yankee playoff game if they're playing on a Sunday or something like that. But you're not sitting there locked in on it. We're not sitting there breaking it down the way we will be Patriots and Bills. But we're excited for Red Sox and Yankees tonight. You can check it out on the flagship station of the Red Sox, WEEI. Pregame coverage a little after 5. First pitch 6:08 here tonight.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, we haven't talked about it. Lucas, he's not going to be on the roster. He's been battling with his elbow the last few days, and today he went to see Dr. Dugas. So, you know, hopefully it's nothing major, but he won't be ready for this one.
What does that mean for you guys in Game 3?
We'll go the first two games, and then we'll decide, obviously. We got some kids over there that they have started lately, and you know, but first things first, you know, Crochet Bello, and if we have to make a decision for Game 3, we'll go from there.
That was Alex Cora yesterday, dropping a bomb. Oh, by the way, guys.
Yeah.
No Game 3 starter, Lucas Giolito, right. He went to see Dr. Dugas.
It's like, who? Dr. Dugas? I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign. Probably a bad sign, but
seems like a bad sign.
They didn't have a Game 4 starter, and not that there was a Game 4 in this series, but you're hoping for a long run in the playoffs, and we were like, all right, who's that going to be? Who knows? How many times will you use it? But now that same question is applied to Game 3. We were going over the playoff roster earlier. They released it today. 26 guys on the roster, 12 pitchers, and you're like, all right, Crochet, Bayo. Everybody else, I think, is technically a reliever. You know, Connelly early started games. Kyle Harrison started games. Peyton Tolley started games. But I view all those guys as relievers. It's like, all right, you have 10 relievers, 2 starters. And this is where you say, all right, Alex Cora, earn your money. Figure out a way to jumble these guys around.
That is how I feel.
Yep.
There's a lot of people, like Lou's yelled at me off and on about this, where I think Cora at best is overrated. Doesn't make him bad, but overrated and overpaid. And if they missed the playoffs, I wouldn't have stuck with them. They made the playoffs, so good. You can keep your job. But he's exceptionally well compensated. He's 2-0 against the Yankees in the playoffs. They beat him in 2018. They won the best of 5, 3-1. They won the wild card game in 2021. 6-2 win. Fenway Park. It was nuts.
That was. It was electric.
So Cora's done it before. I think they have a managerial advantage, but I still get to see the advantage play out in this series because I think the Red Sox should win this series. The whole show thinks the Red Sox should win this series. So, yeah, he's going to have to earn his money. Maybe he doesn't get to a Game 3, Keith. But if it does, bullpen game, whether you start with Connelly early or you start with a righty to get that first matchup against Judge, then go to early and piece it together from there, we'll see. But if it goes to a third game, he's going to be earning that contract, or maybe he won't, but it'll be on display either way. But no Giolito is discouraging. Bregman's sick. I haven't seen any updates. I mean, I heard Breslow this morning talking about it. Sounds like he's fine. He went separate from the team. But already it's like, man, I'm trying to get excited for Red Sox and Yankees tonight. Crochet's on the mound. He's dominated New York. Judge stinks in the playoffs. The Red Sox have dominated New York recent vintage. They've won three straight playoff series against them, going back to 04, including the two that Cora won at 18 and 21 we were just talking about. So they kind of dominate. Crochet dominates Judge. Judge stinks in the playoffs. The Red Sox have dominated the Yankees this year, but now you're down Giolito, and Bregman isn't 100% possibly. He's got he's under the weather. He's got the sniffies. And so I'm trying to balance all of that.
I know.
That said, Red Sox in two.
Red Sox in two. I'm right there with you. I like this matchup. It's the matchup I wanted all along. You know, going into the last weekend of the season, there was like four possible first-round opponents. And you're like, all right, rank those. Who do you want? You wanted to avoid Cleveland because of whatever they're doing, they're winning. I don't know how or why, but they are. Then you're like, eh, maybe then you'd rather play Detroit. Obviously, they have Scooble, but you'll take your chance with Detroit. Then probably the Blue Jays, then the Yankees. I'm like, give me the Yankees. I'll face them, even though it is in New York. Now, they're a very good home team, just like the Red Sox are a very good home team.
The Red Sox are 5-2, I think, in New York this year.
Right. So there is that. You know, they're, I think, only one game over 500 on the road this season, but a little bit better at Yankee Stadium.
And they were better down the stretch. Like, the yep. last couple of months, they because there was one point where they were way above water at home and way under it on the road. That flipped later on in the year.
And then
they've been a better road team lately.
The Yankees' two best starting pitchers are good, and they're lefty, and the Red Sox have had a bunch of guys that can crush lefties, you know, and especially if you look at what the team was at the beginning of the year or even what it was like in the middle of the year, you know, Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer, you can go back to Devers. Now, all those guys you would still want in the lineup. Don't get me wrong. Like, those guys can hit both sides. But now you can go tonight. You might see 7-8 righties in the lineup. Like, you could load up righties.
Seven or eight.
Yeah, I mean, and then the Yankees bullpen doesn't scare me. I know they went out and added a bunch of arms, well, but it's not the Red Sox bullpen.
Starting a bunch of righties probably is the way to go against Fried specifically. I know Cora said yesterday Duran is starting in left field.
Yeah, that's fine.
I also would start him. He's 0 for 10 lifetime against Fried.
Ooh.
And by the way, Fried has a lot of big game pitching experience, but it hasn't been great. Mm-hmm. He's made 12 starts, 20 appearances, ERA over 5.
Woo!
He won a World Series with the Braves in 2021. His ERA that year was over 4. 5 appearances, all starts, 2-2, 4.23 ERA. It's not like he was horrible.
Red Sox.
But it's a huge advantage for Crochet, who has pitched in the postseason before. Was out of the bullpen in 20 and 21. 3 scoreless innings in his life. He's dominated New York. He's 3-0 in 4 starts this year against the Yankees. ERA 3.29. His first start wasn't great. His last start, it was 3 runs in 6 innings. But they won all 4 times he took the mound against the Yankees this year. He's punched out 39 and 27 and a third.
Right.
And he dominates Judge. Or does he? I guess that's kind of all or nothing matchup.
Yeah, I guess it's one where both could sort of say, both could feel good about it. Like, he's gotten him way more than he hasn't, and he strikes him out all the time. But Judge is like, well, I've homered twice. It kind of sums up Judge's playoff career.
Correct.
Where the home runs are there, but if it's not a home run, he's not probably getting a hit.
Judge has 16 homers in his career in the postseason, but he's hitting 205 lifetime.
And that's 58 games. So, I mean, if you do that, like, he's on pace. It's lower than, like, what a lot of his seasons are. But
it's 220 at-bats. Like, that's a healthy sample size. You know, almost half a year.
No, but I'm saying, like, that's not a 60 home run pace.
Correct.
Is my point. But it's still pretty good.
He's 205, 768 OPS, 16 homers, 86 punch-outs in the postseason.
Yeah.
Against Crochet, it is all or nothing. He has 3 hits, 2 of them are home runs, 15 at-bats. He's gotten out 12 different times. Crochet struck him out 11 of those 12 times.
See, that's what's tricky about it because, you know, depending on what else is going on and what the Red Sox offense can generate, if Judge goes 1-for-4,
but it's
3 strikeouts and a 2-run homer, and you win the game 3-2 or something, like, obviously you'll take that.
Both his homers were solo shots. One was relatively meaningless on Sunday Night Baseball in September 14th. The other one tied the game. Crochet was out there in the 9th, 1-0 ball game, and he tied the game. So, yeah, I'm with you. If Judge takes him deep, it doesn't matter if Crochet punches him out the other 3 times. That'll be advantage Judge.
Yeah. No, but, I mean, I just think Crochet, this is one of the reasons why you get him. See, this is one of the reasons why you make the trade. It's
100%.
One of the reasons why you give him the big extension. There's not many pitchers in all the baseball that I think you'd feel this confident about, right? Like, I guess Scooble and Skeens. Wheeler? Like, I don't know how many, like,
I'd be a little nervous about Scooble after his last game against Cleveland.
Fair.
This is the same team. I'd be a little nervous about Scooble.
So,
but,
like,
it's fair to take
him
over.
It's like one hand that you can count guys, because the way baseball is now, and pitchers are so fragile, and you see managers go with quick hooks in the playoffs all the time. You know, now that some of those, like, older guys, now that, like, Verlander, Kershaw, Scherzer, they're all, like, shadows of themselves, like this next wave of guys, and Skeens hasn't pitched in the playoffs. Who knows if he ever will?
I was just looking it up. Skubal was really good in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
Three starts, one win, 2.37 ERA, 20 punch-outs, 19 innings. So, yeah, give it to Skubal.
It's a short
Skeens
list.
Has never been there. Yeah. Crochet has maybe only like, done it out of the bullpen.
Houston probably would have felt good about Hunter Brown, but, like, they're not in it. So, if you're looking at, like, the teams that are in the playoffs right now, Fried's good, but, like, you just went over all the numbers. Like, I don't know. I feel way better about Crochet.
We were digging in. Honestly, playoff baseball is just fun to talk about. We were talking about this in one of the breaks. It's been a long time since we've been able to do it. You and I haven't even been able to do it as a show in, you know, a decade. But the way the Red Sox can play this out, the Yankees have, best I can tell, I haven't seen their official lineup when I looked this up earlier or their official roster, but best I can tell, they're going to have two lefty starters, which is you have Fried and then Rodon. They have one real lefty out of the bullpen, Hill. So it's going to make a lot of sense for the Red Sox to stack their lineup the next 2 days with righties. And that doesn't just mean Romy and Ref. That means Sogard.
Yep.
That means Eaton, who has really good numbers against Fried. He's 2-for-3 with two walks against Fried. And then when the lefty comes out, you get all your lefties back in there against their right-handed heavy bullpen. That's where you get Nate Lowe into the game. That's where you get Abreu, if he doesn't start, into the game. Yoshida into the game. That's where you get all your lefties in there against their right-handed bullpen. So that lines up well for Cora, too. I think Cora's pretty good at playing that game. He's pretty good at managing a bullpen the two times he's been to the postseason. So that all should be advantage Cora. And I think, you know, the pockets, as he refers to them in a game, get all your righties in there against the lefty starter the next two games, and then empty all the lefties off the bench once you get into their right-handed bullpen.
Yeah,
I think that's what you do.
Is it Tim Hill?
I think that's their only lefty unless
he's on the roster. So
they just announced it an hour ago.
Is Yarborough on the roster?
He's not. Yarborough's not. It's Bednar, Blackburn, Cruz, Duvall, Hill, Leiter, Weaver, Williams. And then they have Fried, Rodon,
so,
Schlittler, and Warren.
I think that sets up great.
Yeah.
Look out for TBD versus Schlittler on Thursday if we get to game three.
I kind of like sure TBD in that one.
But the first two games, really the way it lines up, I think, are advantage Red Sox. Mm-hmm. They can empty all their righties against the two lefty starters, and then they can get into their lefties against the right-handed bullpen. And the Yankees' bullpen, by the way, has been trash. Mm-hmm. Despite all the moves they made, their bullpen's been trash. You may not believe it, but the Red Sox have the best bullpen ERA in the American League, second best in baseball.
Oh, okay? I do believe it.
And that's floated by Whitlock and Chapman, but so what?
No,
The Yankees bullpen was floated for decades.
I agree.
With Mo Rivera at the back end. So they have the best bullpen ERA in the AL. The Yankees are 23rd in baseball. I'm sorry. Red Sox are 2 in baseball, number 1 in the AL. Yankees are 23rd in baseball. Worst bullpen ERA of any playoff team.
One thing to look at, too, in this one is you mentioned the numbers that Judge has against Crochet. Not a lot of guys have faced Crochet too many times. So only 3 guys have faced him with double-digit plate appearances, or at-bats, I should say. And so Judge is 3-for-15 with the 2 home runs. Paul Goldschmidt is 2-for-15. 5 strikeouts. So a guy who normally destroys lefties, Goldschmidt, not so much with Crochet. Although Cody Bellinger has sort of like reverse splits. Cody Bellinger's good against lefties.
So look out for him.
He's awesome against lefties. He's horrible against righties. It's weird.
It doesn't make sense. He's opposite man. 5-for-14 for a .357 average, 1 home run against Crochet.
So you're saying maybe a Bellinger bet.
I would think maybe.
Okay.
Looks like he kind of. Even Giancarlo Stanton's 2-for-7 with a home run, 5 Ks. So, like, both Stanton and Judge, it's either, like, a strikeout or a home run.
It's true. It's kind of all or nothing. I think it's lined up for the Red Sox, which is why if you go to @JonesandKeefe on Twitter and Instagram, it's honestly a little embarrassing. We didn't commiserate. We didn't talk. We didn't discuss our picks. We just all submitted them to Terp. Jones, Red Sox in 2. Keefe, Red Sox in 2. Billy, Red Sox in 2. Nick, Red Sox in 2. Terp, Red Sox in 3.
Terp.
Come on, Terp.
The hell?
Stick to hoops. Anyway,
they
we'll get.
They don't know what the f*** they're doing. Do you understand that?
We'll get the New York perspective from Keith McPherson from WFAN in New York. He joins us at 1 o'clock. Maybe we'll get some pushback on those predictions. And coming up next, Tuesday, 12:45, that means it's time for the madness, Kiefer Madness.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time for Kiefer Madness.
Kiefer Madness!
Richard Keefe, I think it is. Rich Keefe.
Who is that?
How you doing, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Joshua Adams.
What now? It's Kiefer Madness.
Where's Keefe?
Where is he?
Where's Keefe?
Where is Keefe?
Hey, Keefe, you're a douche.
I was doing Junko Inoshima from Danganronpa.
I'm a firm believer in UFOs and Sasquatch.
That's funny.
Yo, Kiefer Madness is so hit or miss.
Keefe's a nice guy.
Keefe's a nice guy.
Okay.
Kiefer Madness?
It's Kiefer Madness on WEEI.
I bring it.
I'm glad it was up there, not down here. It might have hurt my cat. Yeah, that's her. See? Hey, you're on TV.
After a snake fell on her head.
Sometime between 11 and 12, it rained meat for a period of about 2 minutes.
He takes the spleens and spreads their fat to get an average 6-month temperature and precipitation forecast.
I met a similar species on assignment in Sri Lanka.
All right, here we go. It's time for the madness on Jones and Keefe, WEEI. And we got one here for you, Jones, in the great state of Texas. I believe San Antonio, to be exact.
Oh, Riverwalk.
Near the Riverwalk.
Nice.
This was one. We've had roommates, right? Everybody's had roommates at one point and another, maybe in college, after college, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. In high school, in my case.
Sure.
I went to a prestigious prep school.
I have two now.
Yeah. Right.
My wife and child.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm in a house of women. But yeah, every once in a while, there might be some incidents that you might have.
Yeah.
Some
disagreements
of the like. So let's find out what's going on in San Antonio.
Well, moving on, two people now facing charges after investigators say an argument over a Netflix account got violent.
I can see this.
The old Netflix account.
Gotta be honest. Don't even need to. Might not even need to hear the rest of this. I already know whose side I'm on.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can only have so many accounts on there is one thing.
Yep.
Or maybe you're like, I want to watch this. Or maybe you skipped ahead. I need my continued watching on there.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
Oh, is it that? That's even worse than I thought.
It's not that.
Okay.
That's what I would think that it would be.
Yeah.
But like, hey, I specifically had this movie at a certain spot or a certain show. Now I don't know what episode I'm on. And now this thing is...
I lost my place in season 6 of The Sopranos.
I don't know where I am.
Yeah.
Gotta rewatch everything.
Damn it.
But yeah, they're running a little hot because of Netflix.
Charges after investigators say an argument over a Netflix account got violent. According to an affidavit, two people dropped food off to a far west side home when that argument started.
Two?
I guess two people dropped food off. Maybe they're working in pairs.
Are they roommates?
I don't know. Like, we work together.
Hey, our Netflix is out. Let's go deliver some food.
Drive the food together? You want to be delivery people together?
I honestly have more,
sure.
I have more questions about them than anything.
So do I.
Yeah, okay.
Now, they also seem to be like the witnesses in this.
Yeah.
So like these two people fighting over Netflix might not have gotten in trouble if it wasn't for the two people delivering the food. You're right. There is another whole sequel to this.
Yeah,
that we
we're going to have to circle back to that, but okay.
According to an affidavit, two people dropped food off to a far west side home when that argument started.
I actually can't get over it.
I would have a hard time with that.
I'm going to have trouble pushing past that.
Yeah, the history.
There's two of them delivering the food?
In the history of food delivery, do
they answer this at any point, or is that just a real cliffhanger? Wow.
That's just a detail that's sort of tossed out there.
That's disappointing.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Like, do you have, like, one person drive, one person, like, runs out to, like, the steps, or, like, maybe that?
That's
probably more efficient.
High efficiency.
Yeah.
Oh, good call. Yeah.
But then you got to split the tips.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like pros and cons.
Yeah, sure.
Pros and cons.
According to an affidavit, two people dropped food off to a far west side home when that argument started. Investigators say the two believed Anthony Constantine and Brian.
Yeah, I don't think it's Constantine.
Whatever. Sometimes he's going to push through it.
I don't know how to pronounce it because I'm terrible at pronunciations, but it's not Constantine.
No.
She's like the first time in the prompter reading this.
Investigators say the two believed Anthony Constantine.
That's what I had to read. Ian Hart, it's his name earlier.
I think you nailed it.
Yeah, I think I got that.
I think you got it.
And Brian Reynolds changed the name on an account profile.
There it is.
They changed it on the profile.
Changed the account. You can change the name on yours.
Sure.
Do you have all the different names on there?
Yeah.
Lucas has one.
Yep.
Right?
We got a Lucas one. We have a cat one. My sister-in-law has one.
Yeah, well,
I have one.
All right, easy. Netflix could be listening. Yeah. You don't want to say that.
That's a good point. It's quite actually.
Just your household, Josh. Just your household.
Honestly, I would love if Netflix cracked down on this.
Stop
freeloading my Netflix,
yeah,
Karen.
Get off of that. But yeah, so apparently what happened was it was not a dispute over, you know, the number of people watching Netflix or deleting his continue watching. He changed the name to apparently something offensive.
Oh.
And he didn't care for that.
Oh, no.
Sadly, it doesn't say what it was.
Oh.
It doesn't say what it was. Could have been anything.
Like when you find a roommate's computer and you throw meat spin on there and they come back to it.
Correct.
The oldest trick in the book.
Yep, no, it's not that.
Yep.
Constantine and Brian Reynolds changed the name on an account profile. The four allegedly got into a fight and a gun was fired. Investigators do not know if the bullets caused any injuries. Constantine and...
they don't? I'm sorry, what? This story is so lacking.
She doesn't have a lot of the details.
There's two delivery drivers, which I still can't get past, but now I'm past it.
Yeah.
There were
gunshots.
Bullets were flying. We don't even know if anybody's hurt. What?
But they do know that this guy changed the name on the account, and that's what set it off.
But we don't know to what.
No. Or if anybody was hurt.
I feel like we can't. I feel like
how is this news?
I feel like we can't rule on this until we know what it was changed to. I feel like, honestly, I can't properly levy any charges.
Yeah.
Until I know what the name was. I need to know what the name was changed to before I decide whose side I'm on.
That is significant.
Yeah.
In this story.
It's the biggest.
It could be
evidence.
Anything.
Yeah.
It could be anything.
Yeah.
Investigators do not know if the bullets caused any injuries. Constantine and...
Another crack at the
again?
Name.
I'm sorry.
Constantine? That's not what his name.
Constantine.
No. That's...
it was Constantine a minute ago. No, it's Constantine. just all over the map. Just call him Smith. Just call him Smith and move on. We don't know this guy.
And Reynolds are both now facing aggravated assault with a deadly weapons charge.
I do like how confident she is in the Reynolds.
Yeah.
Say, and Reynolds.
It really exposes. Reynolds. You think she's leaning into it because she knows
she's
that
no
one?
Clue.
She's looking for a life raft on the prompter?
Investigators say the two believed Anthony Constantine and...
Constantine? Is that what we're settled on?
Constantine.
So who changed it? Constantine or Reynolds? Or did Reynolds change Constantine's?
I'm not sure
either.
There's not enough information in this story
liking. It's pretty lacking, but I'd love to rule on this.
Sure, so would I.
It looks like one of these kids is in a neck brace. The mugshots?
Yeah, right. She's like, we don't know if there's any damage done. The guy looks like he's been beat the hell up.
Oh, really?
There's a guy. One guy. Yeah, there you go, Jones.
Somebody.
Which guy do you think got the worst of that?
Definitely the gentleman on the
guy with the neck brace and all the stitchers, all the butterfly bandages.
Well, he looked like he got one good shot on the guy on the right there.
Maybe.
Something.
He might have had that anyway. That's double black eye. That's a busted nose. That guy does have a mullet, though, I think.
Yeah.
Don't you think that might be what that is?
Yeah, oh, sure, yeah.
So they're roommates.
He business.
They
that mullet apparently didn't intimidate the other guy.
They share a Netflix account, and yet they changed his name.
They might change, or they might share social media accounts too. We don't know that.
They could.
They could be like
the Zobrist and his wife.
Yeah, it could
be
like
the Morty twins.
The Morris twins shared a bank account very famously.
Oh yeah.
Marcus and Markeith.
Yeah.
What else did they share?
They've had a couple mugshots, I think, too.
Yeah, it's true.
They beat the snot out of the guy that was hooking up with their mom.
Yep.
Beat the snot out of that guy.
Might have been over a Netflix account.
Could have been.
Constantine.
Not Constantine. But there you go. Yeah, there needs to be a follow-up probably with like actual information.
We need like real investigative journalism on the delivery drivers.
Yes.
The bullets fired.
Yep. And what the password or what the name was changed to.
What did we change the profile name to? It's not like they changed the password and locked the other person out.
No, the guy logged in, saw
whatever they changed
the
name to.
That no longer said Reynolds.
And they're like,
said something else.
That is not funny, sir.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to get my gun.
They got into a brouhaha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's the madness. Okay. Kiefer Madness.
Right.
Every Tuesday, most Thursdays here. On Jones and Keefe. We're going to talk to Keith McPherson from The Fan in New York, WFAN, get a New Yorker's perspective on this series. I'm always curious. You think he listens ahead? Like, I know Tommy Curran sometimes listens ahead.
I bet he's locked in.
Before he comes out. You think he knows what he's getting into?
Probably locked in.
He's getting the madness.
He's like, good breakdown on that Netflix story. Like, aren't the Sox playing the Yankees tonight?
Bunch of Red Sox homers coming up as well.
Yep.
But we'll talk to him, get the New Yorker's perspective, plus all your phone calls. I see you guys hanging out. 617-779-7937. We'll do that next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.